Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists, Catherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Welcome back, listeners, to the Family Express podcast with Catherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans. Our guest today is Norma Brito de la Cuesta, joining us from Costa Rica. Norma has a master's degree in clinical psychology, and she is a practicing therapist. Norma, thank you so much for joining us today and for our conversation around family therapy. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. It's an honor to me to be here and share with you both and all the people that can listen to us.
Awesome, Norma. Thank you so much. And this is so amazing, Norma, because we're going to have you introduce yourself and your history. But I just want to start with, you have come to us with all of these notes, and we're going to use those notes as the kind of structure for our conversation. And I'm just so excited for all of these subtopics that we have. But first, could you tell us about your experience and your work in the field of psychology?
Okay, I worked 12 years in the Children's National Hospital here in Costa Rica. Then I worked in the psychiatric hospital for another 12 years. And along my work there, I have been teaching in Costa Rica University. I teach in psychology. And then in medical school, where I spent 25 years coordinating a fundamental psychiatry that is a course given to second grade doctors along with development and how to do empathy and build a good relationship with the patients. It has been a long way, a beautiful one, along these years.
Wow, so much experience. We're so fortunate to have your wisdom and your learning across all of these years for our listeners today. Thank you so much, Norma.
Norma, it's so lovely to have you here. You're so generous with your time and your expertise. And with so many years and decades of experience, if you could break it down for us, what do you think is really important as we're meeting with families, especially as we're trying to understand different family cultures?
Okay, what I think that we need to keep in mind all the time is that even though we are open and we believe that we understand, we need to explore deeply how the families are built and how they really organize themselves along their lives, and what changes can turn things for families in a different way. Because we can be biased by our own set of norms and ideas about what's going on. And even though that could be right, it's important to understand if we are really right on that and explore it to be sure that we are landing in a right way with the family, building trust and let them know that we really are there for them, understanding, not judging, but really trying to facilitate a good communication and relationship between them all.
That's a wonderful attitude to bring to working with families, because we've all been a part of a family and many of us are currently in families. And so as open and as curious as you say we think we are, we're still stepping into a family system for a very important part of work, but we're stepping in with our own biases, right? Whether we try or not. And so practically speaking, Norma, what questions do we ask, or how do we do a thorough assessment to learn about some of these differences or to bring what the family really believes to the surface?
Okay, I think that at the beginning, as we usually do in EFFT, we ask little if we meet with the whole family, how does it feel to be part of this family, in order to recap a little of what's going on inside each of them in the family as a family and as a part of it. And then I will move a little on into how are they parenting, trying to understand their values, their traditions, and how they manage their belief system. Because trying to understand that can help us really attune to the preoccupations or the worries that they have toward what's happening in the family at the moment they come to us. So this can open a door or a little window to go into this family life in order to really hang on with what they think and believe is important. And as we see along our lives, there are a lot of families with people coming from different places, different cultures. And that part is important to consider, because when they are a couple, everything seems to go right. But when the kids come and how we were raised come into the picture, then we start having trouble, because we were raised differently and what we believe is right or wrong maybe is not the same for both of us. And then this part is important to be slow and to do it with a lot of care and comprehension of where do they come from. They have migrated from someplace. They migrated because they want better opportunities, or they migrated because they were in trouble and in danger. Because the way people come changes the way they behave and they raise their kids, and how they trust people around and let the kids develop the skills they need to move around. Sometimes they need to protect them so much that they block the normal development in order for the kids to really adjust and develop a sense of belonging in the school they are. And they came and talked, and it's like, don't say like that, don't speak like that. And kids get confused because they don't understand if this is normal where I go and learn, and this is not right at home. They began to be confused, and the trust and the confidence in the parents began to switch, to change. And we need to be careful with that.
Thank you so much, Norma. So I think there's two things that are always tricky for me about assessment. One of them is like, what are the questions you ask to get this information? The other one is, how do you have the confidence to take the time to ask these questions when the family is coming in with a critical issue, right? Like, they're coming here because they want to speak about this, and then I want to take a step back and understand how they even approach that. And okay. So, yeah.
Of course, at the beginning, we need to listen to what they are coming with in order for them to feel confident and comfortable with us. But in the middle of it, when you listen and reflect and validate and make them feel like, I'm understanding, this is right, I can see that, am I getting, like we do in EFFT. We need also to explain, we are going to go through different questions here that I need to ask, because I want to really understand how you guys think and how do you come to be the family you are in order to be there with you and help you with this you're bringing to me. I need to understand deeply who you are and where do you come from. And that is really important for me, to be really respectful of who you are.
I love the way you're saying this. When you say it, it also just feels so incredibly authentic and genuine that it's hard to imagine that a family wouldn't take well to that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so you've spoken a bit, Norma, about the how to bring this in. And then can you speak a little more to what exactly do we assess in families?
Okay, we need to see and really focus on what are the parenting goals of the parents. Okay, how do they want to raise their kids? Are they looking for independence, or they are more a tight family that want the kids to depend on them? What are the main goals, the core goals for this family to get? Sometimes they even don't know where are they taking the kids to. So it's important to reflect on that and try to find it out, and maybe if both of them can agree, and we would like this or that. And I explore also the discipline.
Norma, before we move to discipline, can mm-hmm. we just spend a moment with parenting goals? Because that in itself
is huge.
Mm-hmm.
That idea of like, what are your hopes and dreams for your children? And when I even just think back to my family, my mom's dream was that I would travel the world and do a gap year. And then my husband's family was educating the kids so that they would do well one day so that they could take care of the parents. Like the parents put all their resources into my husband so that he could eventually take care of them. Like that's already so different, right?
And this is so important, and thank you for your words, because when we have different expectations along our lives, this makes it difficult for us to live and raise a family feeling comfortable with each other. And that is so hard, even though we come from families that expect things from us, and we promise ourselves not to do that to our kids. That became a whole challenge, because you expect the better, and what's the better for them?
Yeah.
Maybe in the moment of life they don't want to go and travel around. They want just to go straight to school, and that is important. And when parents have advanced education, they expect also the kids to choose between those kind of professions and careers. And if the kid says, no, I don't have an interest in that. I want to be a chef, or I want to be a mechanic. Mm-hmm. It's like, gosh, but you have so much abilities. Why are you choosing that? And they don't realize how much they hurt the feelings of those kids that have another dreams and another abilities, and they can be really happy doing different things. Mm-hmm. But our own fears interfere with the respect they need to choose their own lives and the way they want to live their lives. And that becomes even bigger issue when the couple is in trouble feeling, okay, No. We cannot let this happen. You need to stick by me, because if you're not here with me, we are going to have trouble.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means an important tradition in a family.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Norma, the way you're fleshing that out, like, gives us so many areas that we can imagine families getting stuck. in these expectations, in the pressures, in the communication? And does a family even have these conversations? Is it about what the parents want, or do the parents say it's about the children choosing? Like, what a fabulous question to sit and ask a family together and see what they come up with, right? Wow.
Yes, and asking the questions is important, because what I remember from my own process, I never thought of not going to the university. That was not possible in my family. And now that I work with this, it's like, oh gosh, sometimes you even don't have a choice, because things are so established that this is going and this is moving, and that's it. There's no negotiation possible. And right now, kids are not as we used to be. So they ask and they sit and they want to do things differently, and they have strong opinions. And we need to respect that, because we cannot pretend that they can fly and do their own things and be successful if we are around setting limits and telling them what they cannot do.
Like you're saying, like, generations are changing and the world is changing. And so it's not even just what the family wants, but what's the larger context they're a part of, right? You also mentioned the second one was discipline. Can you speak more to that?
Okay. But in discipline, this is something I have been working with and having a little trouble sometimes, because parents are trying to be so nice, that they forget what limits are. And then they think that they need to make kids choose everything, and they are not able to decide some things, and they need a little guidance with love and respect. But it's like, if I have a parent that was really rigid and make me do things the way he or she wants, then I want my kids to feel free. And freedom is something that you need to use when you know how to use it.
Nice.
To really know this is a choice I have, and be guided by a loving adult that is wiser than the kid is important, because that gives you the backup you need to feel safe and move around exploring and deciding, I can take this or I can dismiss this. But this is not about it, what I have to do, but I have to do some things and I can choose some things around.
So discipline is an important part of a family. I mean, people can vary from having very authoritarian to permissive or even democratic styles. And you're also speaking to how much that these rules or these guidelines bring structure to a family. And there's a lot of security and trust that can come from a child feeling safe. Because what is discipline there for if not to protect a child so that they can grow well? And that's, so we're saying, ask about this.
Discipline is to protect kids. Discipline is not just to limit
the kids.
And they have sometimes this idea that is setting limits, like limitations, not limits. Okay.
So
that is important, because a more authoritarian approach can dismiss the kid's need to be seen and felt in a different way, because what he feels is not important, and what the parent says is the ultimate word. Right. And a more permissive one led the kid out there without any guidance. So I think that an in-between, just knowing your kid and knowing what your kid needs from you, is really important, because kids are different. Even though they are siblings, they need different things from us. And we need to understand that maybe we need to switch a little the way we set things for each of the kids. But there is a way, a path that we choose to put them through that is comfortable for us as a couple, as parents, to take them where we want there. And for that, you need a strong, fluent communication. You need from the start to develop that concept that what you need, you can ask. I cannot guarantee, I always say yes, but I can guarantee that I'm going to listen. Mm-hmm. And I'm listening carefully because I love you.
Oh my gosh, this is very important, Norma. I want to underscore when you said discipline is about protection. It's not about just limiting children. In fact, we want to help our kids grow. To help them grow, we need to know what they need. And then the discipline is actually to protect them and guide them along that pathway to growth. And in order to figure that out, what they need and how we respond, which can be individual across children, we have to really be able to communicate, but also have that, yeah, the two-way conversation. So, wow. Okay, so we've covered asking about parenting goals for your children, asking like, what's your approach to discipline in this family? What's your understanding even of what discipline is and how it serves a role in the family? And then your third one is communication in the family system. Can you speak to that one?
Okay, communication in the family system, I think that is a big thing, because if you establish enough trust and safe haven, then the kids can come to you and express themselves since they are little until they grow older. And for that, you need to set spaces to do that, because people say, oh no, I talk with them. Yes. But we need to share time with them and enjoy them telling their own stories and getting information and on how they relate to other kids, how they understand what's going on, and follow that in order to guide them in a different and more lovable way. Because some kids are shy and others just can't stop talking. And you need to make space for those to speak out loud or express themselves in different ways, even by playing with you and having this time, this play time, where they open up and they start talking about a lot of things. Because sometimes with kids, even they grow older, sitting down to talk is not necessarily the way. We need to find out which is the best way for each of them, and then realize her process, her thinking process, how they process when they have a trouble with another kid, and what happened, and be open and willing to understand and not to judge. Because when parents overprotect their kids, oh no, I'm like this kid, why does he tell you that? Then you stop the process of naturally giving information, because they feel, uh-oh, my mother is going to get mad with my friend. It's better for me not to talk about this, because this can do things differently. And we don't realize how our way of communicating with them can stop them from communicating with us. That is what we really need.
Oh, Norma, I just love what you're saying, and I can see all my parent responses that could use some finessing. I just love what you're saying, that even when a kid opens up about, say, a peer, our response to what we talk, what we say about that peer, our opinions about that peer, if this is the example we're going with, that matters. It matters in the process of our communication with our kid. Our kid could experience that as mom being shut down, mom shutting down this conversation. And that would be potentially encoded as mom's not a safe person to talk to, or mom only wants to hear good things. Mom's not, doesn't really know how to hold the hard stuff, or it becomes about mom's response and mom's opinion, right? And then we lose focus on, why are you even talking to me about this kid, right? Why are you, what is it that you want to get out of this conversation by telling me? I just love what you're saying. And that repetition, that could be encoded as a positive repetition for the kid, or it could be encoded as, don't take this to mom. And I'm using mom since I'm talking about myself.
That happened to all of us. And this is part of the education we are giving to them. They are free to talk, and we can listen with respect. And and before judging, we need to understand. And that is what we need them to understand. First is understanding. Then you can give an opinion, but try not to give an opinion too soon, because that closes the door for the good and healthy communication.
Lovely clarifying on that. Lead with understanding. So whatever your kid brings to you, lead you first as the parent, lead with understanding. Why is my kid bringing this to me? What do they want to get out of it? What are they trying to make sense of? Hold on to my personal opinion, my personal reaction as the parent in the parent role, because my personal reaction could potentially shut down that conversation. My kid may not risk and reach again. And then there goes the process and the healthy communication breakdown. Fantastic. Thank you, Norma. I think we have to move on to the next one.
Norma, can I ask a quick question about that? Because with communication, in some cultures, communication is very direct. Sometimes it's really indirect. That doesn't matter so much, right? Like, you're talking about open communication across those two styles,
I think. I'm talking about that. And thank you for remembering it this, because sometimes in different cultures, talking freely, as I am talking here now, is not what they like or expect. I remember a patient that I asked him when I was talking to him, can you please look at me when we are talking? And he was like, I don't feel comfortable. And I was like, can you explain me a little? What makes you feel uncomfortable looking at me? You know, I grew up in a family where my parents asked for respect for us not looking at them. Like, if I look at their eyes, that was a threat, not a respectful way of facing communication. So what do they expect? They expect from me that I lower my head and I talk with respect, in a low voice, but without facing them. And those little things can make a huge difference, because we want them to feel comfortable, but we need to understand, where does that come from? These days, I see a family and the mother just look at the boy that was telling me something, and what's happening here? I have advised him so much that there are things that you talk about and there are things you don't talk about, because that belongs to the family thing. And let's try to understand, because this is a double standard. And sometimes for the kids, that is not nice. And for the teens, it's even worse. Because they begin to push, no, this is not right. We need to be who we are. And then we need to really understand what, okay, the communication is an instrument for understanding or is a way of preserving and trying to put things aside. Because sometimes they want to communicate to let them know that these are things that are not permitted to talk about. That this is, I know, there is an expression in Spanish that it says like, we wash the clothes at home.
Yes, okay. Hear it in English. Don't wash your dirty linen in public.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yes.
So that is part of what is permitted or not in our communication, right?
Right. That's a great question. Okay, so let's see. So we've got parenting goals, and what are parents' hopes for their children? And where does that lie on a continuum from independence to dependence? Then we've also got discipline. How does this family discipline? What's their approach? What's their goal in doing so? And we have a continuum from authoritarian to democratic to permissive. And now we've spoken about communication and keeping communication open. But is it going to be done in a more directive way, in a more indirect way, outside the family, or keep that dirty linen at home? wonderful, Norma. I think we can cover maybe two more today. Can we move on to our next one, education?
Okay. This in different families in different countries, parents have different kind of involvement in education. What do they expect? To what level they need to go? They need to be a really good in academic work, or they are more into learning and exploring different areas and having fun and do sports. We need to really, really, really understand what is important. Is academic life important because they want the best education, or because they want to move on into a different level and they feel that their life was really difficult because they don't have a proper education and they put a lot of pressure into that and also into grades that we know that doesn't measure what they really know, but that is a measure. And for a lot of parents, that is important. And more integrative education is the better for the kids to have a formal education and a time to have sports and time to play. Because if we put a lot into academic, then kids lose a part of their system of belonging and enjoying being at school and share with other kids around. Some parents doesn't like that, and that is important. I used to explore also, do you as a family invite people around, or you like to go out with other families and all that? Because sometimes they put a lot of pressure in the social thing. Oh, I am worried because my kid is not socializing the way I expect. But when I explore at home, they never invite a human being that is not part of a family. And then how they learn about this, how they can open themselves to other people if the role model they have at home is more private, because they want to keep it that way, or they are shy, or they come from another countries and they don't feel comfortable, but they want their kids to be part of something more bigger, and they don't know how to help them that way. So they put pressure on that too, and they feel that through being a good student, they are going to invite the kid to different things. And if you are very funny, they are not going to like it. So stop it, because this is going to push you away from the places that we want you to be and really understand and be part of. And that also led us to the family structure, okay, that is really important, and is how many people are involved in child rearing, okay? There is a nuclear family, mom, dad, and the kids, or, for example, in different cultures, we have this part that the grandparents are an important part of the family, and they take care of the kids in the afternoons while the parents are working. And there are another set of values around there, and sometimes a lot of trouble. This morning, someone says, I am really upset because I cannot understand why my mom was so rude with me and she's so gentle and nice with my kid. That hurts so much. I can't understand. I know this is positive, Norma, but I cannot feel it this way. It hurts. And that involvement also implies a different kind of relationship with that kid that is close to that mom she wants differently in her life. So there are a lot of things in twinkle there that need to be understood. And when families come from another places and they need to leave that part of the family, the kids have really a hard time. That is a loss for the kids, because they are all alone and they were not prepared for that, because they come from another place where they feel held and contained. And now there's just a tiny small apartment with a lot of dreams to come true, because they have a different life coming on. But the here and now is really difficult.
Thank you so much, Norma, for speaking to education and the importance placed on education, and then the family structure. As you're talking about family structure, I'm just imagining even like a family tree and how big the roots are. And then you're impressing on me that if you've got this big extended family structure, but then you move or immigrate, like the loss that's implicit in that system, right? And in transitions. Norma, thank you so much for speaking to us about parenting goals, discipline, communication, education, family structure. And we've got five more to hear from you about maybe in another episode. And just as you consider each family through this assessment lens, with these 10 different topics, do you have like a treatment form that you fill out, or do you ever give parents a questionnaire along this, or do you kind of collect this information more experientially and then just put it in your notes? Just curious how formal, informal you are with your assessment.
I have my my own form, but I don't give it out, because the richness of talking through the different points for me is really, really important. I don't want them to go and write the first thing they think is about this. I would love to spend time on that, and I use sometimes this form I have, and I put it there in my notes with like a small thing, and I feel this belongs, this is important for this, like different bullet points that can help me to go through the different things and don't forget that we need to go through them, because at different moments, as you say, they come for a specific thing, and we need to consider that. But along the work that we are doing, we can still be assessing in different ways in order to understand better. And the more you work with them, the more open they are. and then they lead you and they can really make you understand how deep some things are, and you can find blocks that even they don't realize they have that are being an obstacle for the family and the relationship in that family.
That's precious, Norma. You're saying the assessment is ongoing and it's part of the therapeutic journey. You have these points on a checklist so that you can remember to go back to these in case you skip one of them. But you really are collecting this information through stories, through different questions, through a discovery process with the clients. And as your alliance grows, which of course, if you're asking about these areas, I'm sure the family does start to feel more seen and heard and understood by you. And so as that alliance grows, you also get richer information shared. And hopefully that's a reflective journey for the family as well. And so it's this ongoing assessment process. Thanks.
Yes.
I think what's great about your process, Norma, is you're going to find the points where the family, the parent subsystem and the kid subsystem, where there's alignment, where there's agreeance, where there's flow. And then it's also going to potentially illuminate stuck places, like you said, blocks that maybe they didn't even know that they had. And I really, one of the things that comes to mind is what you said earlier about what is the definition of better, right? And that could be a place where there's, as you kind of hover around these topics, and that being one of them, the parental goals is, oh, we could identify that there's a potential, you know, unknown and an implicit block there. And I just think that what you do is so beautiful, and it's structured and it's organized, but I can tell that the way you do it is very experiential and organic. And so I can imagine the families don't feel interviewed. I can imagine that they feel like it's a story, and Norma is listening to the story of our family, and that it feels very tailored and individualized to them, which I think takes some finesse to do as a clinician, to have a mental checklist, but have it feel very organic at the same time. Thank you so much, Norma, for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you to you. It has been a beautiful experience, really. Thank you a lot.
Thank you, Norma.
And we're going to have to bring you back for the other five topics. So listeners, stay tuned. We'll bring Norma back and we'll get the other five topics out to everybody. They're really good ones on identity, cultural identity, gender roles, gender expectations. And we certainly don't want to leave those out. So we'll just have to have Norma come back and share her expertise on these topics as well as part of the assessment of a family system. So thank you so much, Norma. We're going to schedule you to come back again in the future, okay?
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again for our next journey.